dig it. Solid. Right on. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
You got to be doing all right, man. It's 40 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's amazing. I walked out this morning completely surprised.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, man. How long can we keep saying this? Man, 40 degrees. In the middle of January. Hey, there's another guy over here, man.
Oh, I didn't even notice him.
Inconspicuous.
Good morning.
Just a fly, on the wall.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm all right. You know, we're drizzling here, and in California, they have atmospheric rivers.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing the videos of what's going on there. And I said, we're just so lucky. Sometimes it gets chilly here, okay? We should not complain.
Well, you know, you're a guy who can, and I often wonder why you're not in Arizona or Florida. You know, guys like you, that's where they go, man.
Yeah, the northern climates are where all of the great thinking has been done. When you get into that warm weather, people just bask in the sun. Their brains turn off. You know, everything great that ever happened just about happened in probably during the winter, you know, when someone had nothing better to do than figure out how the world works.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've never had an inclination to move to that?
No,
really warm
I had a second home in Utah in ski country, but that's hardly getting warmth, right? So, no, I have not. I have no inclination, certainly no inclination to go to Florida, which has a short shelf life right now. I mean, Florida's about 10 feet above sea level, and the sea level is looks like it's going to go up about 10 feet. So, you know,
So it's inevitable.
Or Rivera to Florida.
So it's inevitable that something's going major eventually is going to happen in Florida.
Yeah, like major, you know, look at the weather events in California. I think, first of all, I think warmth, I was thinking about this meteorologically on the way out here. Warm weather is caused by the warmth of the sun, and violent weather is caused as well by the warmth of the sun. So I think warm places are much more inclined to have violent weather than cold places. And cold weather is less inclined to be violent. You might get a blizzard, but you don't get violent issues.
Yeah, but that can't be the reason you're not going where it's warm.
Well, I don't like Florida.
No,
all right, there I said it. Now the Southwest. I think the Southwest is nice, but hey, this is where I live.
Well, and that's kind of, you know, I say to people friends who've left here and have gone to Florida and California and Texas, and they say, man, you need to be, man, I'm fine, right?
Actually, and Florida is kind of a waiting room. You know, it's for the for the elderly. I mean, it's like the ultimate waiting room. The demographics down there are pretty old. It's not a place where people walk from place to place. You have to get in your car and drive on. Everything out there is Blue Mound Road in
Brookfield.
So, you know, 10 lanes and lots of traffic.
Yeah, well, you know, Sandy, I guess people, it's that warm weather that people are enthralled with. Because they always call me, hey, Earl, it's 80 degrees here. What is it back home? I said, well, you know what it was. You know what it is.
Yeah, the warm weather is the best part.
Yeah, well.
Well, we have the joy of waking up and finding out it's 40. We can celebrate 40. You know, you've got to, you have to reduce your expectations.
Well, my son's in Phoenix, and he loves that,
Him up in July.
I know. Because he told me in June of last year, over 60 days, 70 days, there were over 100.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. You can, you know, when it's cold out, you can put more clothes on. Okay.
Right.
When it's really hot out, there's a limit.
Yeah. And
to
so
what
who,
you can take off.
Who wants to be around 100 degrees? I know I don't. I complain when it's 95 here. And so, but, you know, I think he said it was a good three solid months. They were over 100 degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet people have to function. They're in the desert.
Luckily, they've got lots of water there, so they get the, oh, wait a minute. That's they right.
They're short on that.
They're short on water, too.
So you just, you know, it is not something that I guess I'm going to wind up doing.
You know, I was talking about the shelf life of Florida, but you see pictures now of, for instance, Great Salt Lake, which is going to apparently disappear in the next 5 years if the trend lines continue. You look at the Colorado River,
I was just going to mention that.
It's going down to a trickle. It was the main water source for southwestern United States. So, yeah.
Well, you know, when you just even talk about that, before we get into the show.
We aren't in the show?
Well, all the other things we're going to talk about. But you would think that the Colorado situation, knowing that that's drying up like that.
Yeah.
That you would say, and people would have to say, this is something that we can no longer wait, right?
It is a clear object example of kicking the can down the road. You know, it's a problem. It's going to be very hard to solve. Let's solve it tomorrow because we can get along today. And the West has been doing that. It's entered into interstate compacts to try and agree on what percentage of the river each state could remove. And now that the river is getting reduced to a trickle, those percentages don't make sense anymore because there isn't enough. And so it's, you know, young lawyers, when you go to law school east of the Mississippi, you don't even study water rights. It's not a problem.
Right.
When you go to law school west of the Mississippi, it's one of the primary courses, more primary than real estate is water rights because turns out water is really important.
Well, it's not like you can refill it, right? Once it's emptied out.
Yeah, it's interesting. But from a geological, chemical, organic standpoint, every molecule of water that has ever existed exists today. It evaporates and then it rains. It moves from place to place, and it also moves from below the ground to above the ground. And so, you know, its location becomes different. But basically, the amount of water is a finite number that doesn't really go up or down, but it moves. And its movement from place to place is what causes the problems. And it's heat that moves it.
You know, Sandy, football for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most entertaining football games I've ever seen. You can talk about the old football, and I used to love that. But the football today is exciting. It's electrifying, right?
I mean, the NFL, it turns out, with their salary cap, was genius. And the salary cap, that was a Freudian slip.
Well, it's crap for the guys who
are
on the
saying.
Bottom end
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, but the salary cap is genius because it really has created a parity in the league. You look at like the Rams. Win the Super Bowl last year, don't make the playoffs this year. The Packers, you know, it's just a razor's edge between being good enough to win. And so many of the games of this year were settled just the way all the Vikings games were settled. The Vikings get to the playoffs and they have a minus point differential and they won 13 games.
Yeah. You know, the talent level of these players. There's not that big a difference from the starter to the third string guy.
Yeah.
Third string guy was the top player in his division, college division, star player. And so the guys who are on these teams, there's not that big a
Well, and I think that has caused coaches and coaching styles and systems to become more important. So you can look at a guy like Shanahan. Wow. I mean, he's been able to be successful day in, you know, with all kinds of different talent. He takes Brock Purdy, a third-string quarterback, and he looks like a star. And maybe he is, but maybe he isn't either. I mean, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe all these guys do much better when they play for Kyle Shanahan because he knows how to use them.
I watch Purdy.
He is pretty good.
Yeah, he's good. Hey, there's no question. There's also a guy who was the second to the last quarterback drafted before Purdy. Second to the last, he was second last, Purdy was the last, who was playing Saturday. And he was pretty doggone good. So these were the two last drafted quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And both of them were starting in the playoff games. And both of them look really good.
Well, kids who play quarterback in high school, these people are going to quarterback camps from the time they're in seventh grade. I do think that the mechanics and the talent level of quarterbacks in particular has gone way up. Their passing capabilities, there's so many quarterbacks in the league right now that can flick their wrist and throw it 60 yards.
You're not telling me, Sandy, you can't be telling me that these quarterbacks of today were more athletic than Johnny Unitas.
For sure. I can remember Johnny Unitas with his high top shoes trying to run.
Even when he was young.
Yeah.
But these guys.
Or, as good as he was, Bart Starr. I mean, Bart Starr couldn't hold a candle to the quarterbacks of today in terms of his talent level.
These guys are all athletic, physically strong. And mentally, you know, you look at Terry Bradshaw, and I remember Terry Bradshaw and always loved the Steelers, but Terry Bradshaw was nothing compared to even Brad Purdy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about athletically.
He reminds me of Fran Tarkenton. I mean, he's really mobile, smart. They're all these guys that are. The talent has spread out in the league. It's very close in the games. I think all these players have gotten bigger. The backs haven't gotten them much bigger, but the way they deploy them, you know, they don't deploy them that often, and they aren't called upon to do that much.
And it's pretty good that they're not called upon to do that much, because the shelf life for a running back in the NFL is – Not very long.
John Brockington was the beginning of that. Remember that?
Yeah, well, these guys are battering rams.
Yeah.
And I was just watching some of the licks that these guys are taking. Man. And then they get up and run back to the huddle. You know, I mean, football's great. It's still my favorite sport to watch. I'm as excited about it as I was when I was a kid watching the games this past Saturday. Anyway, got to go to a break. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Our phone line's open as always at 844-967-2789. And it is Dr. King's holiday. So we're going to be talking a little bit about Dr. King after this break. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, it's Dr. King's holiday. And I have to tell you, I am basically the kind of guy that I am because of my admiration as I watched Dr. King as a young boy. And his intellect, the fact that he was brilliant, the fact that he was willing to fight for justice, even to the extent that he knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to be murdered. And he kept moving. Because if people really knew the amount of threats that Dr. King received on a daily basis and threats to his family because he was looked at as a troublemaker.
Well, you know, not only did he receive all those threats, but he had the hostile FBI. The agency that might be there to protect him, to ferret out these threats, to find the people who are making the threats, and that same FBI was keeping a file on him, was leaking information to the press, whether it was true or not. He lived in great peril.
You know, the bottom line was he died at 39. I think back to where my mind was at 39 and where my mind is today. Dr. King was evolving, and so there are many people who don't really know that the Dr. King who died, who was murdered at the age of 39.
Well, and he led the March on Washington when he was 34, 33, right? I mean, He was like, just think of what he was doing as a younger man. He dies in 68, but he was doing an awful lot in 62, 63, 64.
In his early 20s. He was charged with taking on the civil rights struggle in this country. And with all the other black leaders at that time, Roy Wilkins and others who were heading the NAACP and the Urban League and these other organizations were all seasoned men. And so this young guy who graduated, who went to college at 16 years old and wound up graduating and Morehouse at the age of 21 and started moving. He was clearly a pastor and did not want to get involved. He didn't want to really take on this burden. It was kind of thrust upon him to organize the civil rights struggle. Young kid, 21, 22 years old, and he was the head of that civil rights struggle, took it on, especially, Sandy, down in Alabama and Mississippi. And can you and I have been around a while. We knew how things were in the South, right?
Well, to be honest with you,
through reading, I mean,
yeah, we didn't know firsthand, and I think that it was a problem that existed someplace else. We could kind of wrongly blame the South for being racist, and we kind of fatuously believed that up north we didn't have that problem, and we found out very quickly in the '60s that up north we did have that problem.
Well, you know,
we found that out in Milwaukee.
My dad was from Arkansas, and he fought in the war. And when he came back home, he couldn't sit down on a bus, right?
Yeah.
Open seat. And life on the line, fighting for the country. And yet, if there was an open bus seat, it was reserved solely for whites. He couldn't sit there. And he told me some stories about what he went through as a young boy in Arkansas. I didn't know. I was born in the North. And you really, the history of what happened in this country, where you have people now who call it wokeism and critical race theory, and they don't want that talk, is an insult to people like Dr. King and others who fought the fight for that, and who knew just how injustice in this nation was choking people and causing people. At the same time, we were talking about freedoms. Well, as you well know, there was a time in this nation's history not so long ago that everybody did not have freedom.
Well, Jim Crow was alive and well in the South, and the North kind of ignored it.
So
the Democrats and the labor unions had this alliance with the Dixiecrats, and the Dixie portion of the Democratic Party was the Southern part that was fostering and supporting Jim Crow. I just saw a short reel from a movie that
So Sandy, yeah. Hold the thought, because I want you to explain a little bit of what Jim Crow was, because there are people who are listening who probably don't know.
Okay.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we'll be right back. So people hear Jim Crow. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You could text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. $1 million advertising giveaway. We're excited about our new and still growing civic media network of radio stations, and we're doing something big to celebrate. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Save the date, Thursday, January 26th. You'll be able to fill out an application for a piece of our giveaway, and your chance to work with the civic media sales team to create a radio advertising campaign promoting your business across the network for free. The $1 million advertising giveaway starts at 9 a.m. only on Thursday, January 26th. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and be part of the conversation happening there. Some rules apply. For details on our website, civicmedia.us/million. And be sure to let everyone know you heard about the $1 million advertising giveaway, on the Earl Ingram Show. Got it, Sandy?
What show is that again?
The Earl Ingram Show. But
how much is that again? How much?
$1 million giveaway. Go. You know, and those different packages will be from $5,000 to $20,000 of advertising, depending on the size of your business. But anyway, Sandy, today is Dr. King's celebration, and you know it's a national holiday. And it took a while for it to happen, but it happened, and it is a big enough deal that it's a national holiday. So, Sandy, I was asking you before we went to break. There are people who don't know what
Jim Crow.
Jim Crow.
Yeah.
Laws were. Let's talk a little.
Well,
bit
you know, Reconstruction was the period right after the Civil
slavery.
War,
yeah.
And the slavery broke down, and Reconstruction was essentially the implementation of governments in the South and the seceding states that was to be essentially the implementation of non-slavery and an economy and a society that was not premised on slavery. But it didn't take long at all for the Reconstruction period to phase out. And what was phased in was Jim Crow laws, which were laws at the state and local level, which basically segregated the use of all different kinds of things. So it allowed public places to be segregated. It was the principle of Plessy v. Ferguson, which was a Supreme
Separate
Court case.
Equal.
Separate but equal.
Yeah.
So Plessy v. Ferguson was a Supreme Court in which they fictitionally said it's okay to have this separate but equal policy. And the fictitious part of it was that it was separate, but it wasn't really equal. Most of it was second class. So, you know, if you were of color, you couldn't drink out of the water fountain, you had to go someplace else.
Schools were segregated.
Couldn't use this bathroom, you had to use one that was, schools were all segregated. And they had separate schools, but the schools looked different and they were different. And it wasn't until 1954 in a Brown v. Board of Education Supreme Court case that said, look, separate but equal isn't right for education. And it took until 64 and 65 with the Civil Rights Acts to make the laws, the local laws that were implementing these Jim Crow restrictions, illegal. And so, you know, I saw a clip from a movie that was about NASA, the early effort to put a spacecraft up, and was headquartered in Alabama.
Well, yeah, there are three or four black women.
Right.
Who...
And some black women there properly were objecting to the fact that they had to go three floors away to go to the bathroom. They couldn't. They had separate but equal bathroom access.
And, well, those were the women who were the mathematicians who kind of organized and kind of led, you know, in the NASA in getting those.
But I mean, you think about it, NASA is a federal program. So they were implementing these Jim Crow restrictions within a federal program, I suppose, because they leased the facilities they were occupying. Who knows? But, I mean, Jim Crow was pervasive, and it was explicit. Up north, we didn't have Jim Crow laws, but we found out in the 1960s in Milwaukee the extent to which we definitely had a separation that was not to be broken, not to be crossed without violence. So we had silent Jim Crow. We didn't have overt Jim Crow.
You know, I would tell people that when I was a young boy, people of color in Milwaukee couldn't live past Capitol Drive, and so we were kind of separated in our own segregated community, different than probably what was going on in the South, because industry was here and people made enough money that they could own their own homes inside of this enclave where blacks could not move beyond that. But I said all that to say to Sandy, so Dr. King stepped forward and took on this battle to challenge the government to live up to what it said it was. And he watched all of this in horror as these people from his parents' generation, my generation, my parents' generation, Dr. King would have been 94 years old. But he took on this burden and knew that It was not going to be an easy slog, and to his credit, took the beatings. Mahatma Gandhi was his idol and the kind of guy that he patterned his movement after, nonviolence, and so that was what separated him.
I mean, to remind people, Mahatma Gandhi was the leader of India and the in their revolt against colonialism, and he actually was able to generate a movement that involved hundreds of thousands, even millions of people who simply sat down. They simply said no.
Took the beatings.
Yeah, they just passively said no. We will not cooperate with you, the government, and passively through civil passive disobedience. Accomplished independence.
And Dr. King saw that, and he thought that was the nonviolent way, was the right way to approach this. Even though at that time there was an organized movement of militant people of color who were saying, no, if someone hits me, I'm going to hit them back. If someone sicks dogs on me, I'm going to sick dogs back, or I'm going to do everything I can to fight back. I'm not going to. So it was a big, tough fight for Dr. King amongst people of color. Because again, there were those who suffered some egregious things in the South who just clearly stated, we have had enough. And so he had to fight that battle amongst people of color. And I think in a lot of instances, there are whites who didn't realize just that he was battling on two fronts. And the fact that there were black people who said to him, you and what you are doing is not right. We should be fighting. But Dr. King knew that there was no way possible that if black people went, you know, weapon for weapon, there was no way possible that they were going to be able to get their freedom, and we would be able to get our freedom war.
And, you know, I think, though, that that early 60s, the March on Washington and all of that happened before the North understood that we had all of this, what was then latent, but became by the end of the 60s apparent racism. So that I had friends who were ideologically very interested in promoting the rights of blacks, who were going to go down to the South, but none of us talked about how we needed to do anything like that in the North. It hadn't surfaced. You know, what this redlining that was occurring in housing in Milwaukee was happening. But the first of all, the number of African Americans in Milwaukee was a far smaller number.
Right.
They were all, you know, the jobs that were available were on a high growth curve. There was a lot of middle class living going on. It was a totally different situation, and I think everyone in the North thought the problem was down South. And it wasn't until the late 60s that the realization became clear that in Boston and Chicago and Milwaukee and all these northern cities, racism and the division between the races was potentially more volatile than what was existing in the South that was being attempted to be solved by the Civil Rights Act.
You know, and at the same time, Sandy, what people might not have even thought about was that the rest of the world was watching. And so, you know, even though, you know, we clearly did not want the rest of the world to judge us on what we were doing, we were busy in wars and other places, moving our footprint across the globe, and people were saying, Russia and other places, hey, look at what you're doing. Let me read a couple sentences from Dr. King in different stages of his life, and then we'll move on. But I really wanted to touch base. This is Paul's letter to American Christians. I'm afraid that many among you, this is Dr. King in 1958, I'm afraid that many among you are more concerned about making a living than making a life. You are prone to judge the success of your professions by the index of your salary and the size of the wheelbase on your automobiles, rather than the quality of your service to humanity. The misuse of capitalism can also lead to tragic exploitation. Dr. King, I have a dream. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. The quest for peace and justice. I'm only too well aware of the humane weaknesses and failures which exist, the doubts about the efficacy of nonviolence and the open advocacies of violence by some. But I'm still convinced that nonviolence is both the most practically sound and morally excellent way to grapple with the age-old problem of racial justice. Beyond Vietnam, a time to break the silence. Perhaps a more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers, husbands and fathers to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We are taking black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and Eastern Harlem, the other America. Our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice We stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention and the three evils of the society. For the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our community, in our country, even today, is freedom and equality, while racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists. Racism can be that corrosive evil that will bring down the curtain on Western civilization. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and we're going to spend these last few minutes talking about Dr. King. Today is the Dr. King holiday, and this is number 7 of these snippets of the different growth sectors of Dr. King and how he had evolved. And never forget, you know, he was taken away at the age of 39. And I often wonder, had he lived, the impact that he would have had on our nation, had he lived. But anyway, we've got to give ourselves to the struggle until the end. Nothing would be more tragic than to stop at this point in Memphis. We've got to see it through. And when we have our march, you need to be there. Be concerned about your brother. You may not be on strike, but either we go up together or we go down together. Connor, if you please play this short speech from Robert F. Kennedy, the day that Dr. King was assassinated.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. And he once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
You know, Sandy, you remember that, right?
You remember that, you know, and that year hollowed out almost all of us who lived through it, because that man who was speaking was assassinated just months later, and Malcolm X. I mean, it was an unbelievable year.
You know, when and thinking back, I remember where I was. I remember the time. I remember the heartbreak of the assassination of Dr. King, and even to this day, when I think about that, there's a part of me that tears up, because it. Can you imagine had John F. Kennedy, had Robert F. Kennedy, had Dr. King, had those men lived? You know, I think we would be talking about a different America.
Well, in many respects, apparently charisma was a death sentence. Those were very charismatic people who were using their charisma to try and lead the country in a positive direction. You know, it wasn't that clear about John F. Kennedy, but he was sort of the new modern charismatic leader. But certainly,
it was
definitely true of Martin Luther King, and definitely true of his brother Robert at that phase of Robert's life. And, you know, it was like the death of positive charisma. And, you know, we morphed quickly into a focus on Nixon and Watergate. And, you know, the country fell into a sort of a moral abyss that we've had trouble getting out of, actually.
So, Sandy, this will be the last thing I'll say on it. If Dr. King was alive today, he would be speaking out against people who want to do away with the history of what happened in this country, what happened in that time. And for people who say critical race theory shouldn't be taught and all these other things, Dr. King would disagree with that 100%. To hide the history of what happened in this nation is not the answer. But to make sure that people understood all of the history of this nation is really what we need to be doing in order to make the nation a better place. But for heaven's sakes, to hide it is not the answer. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.